We are quickly approaching the end of 2024. And if you have not purchased an investment property yet this year, and it's been one of your goals, I need you to listen very closely. I know many of you live in areas where it's so expensive and investment properties seem impossible. I'm talking about some of the big cities. So LA, New York City, maybe even Seattle, Atlanta, places in Florida, and the list goes on. If you know that where you live is too expensive, I need you to lock in right now. Investing out of state changed my life as somebody living in California. I now invest in Ohio and I'm growing my portfolio. It's something that's possible. You just need the right information and execution. So if that's you, if you want to learn how to invest out of state, go to outofstatemoney.com and there is a free training that'll outline the steps for you and help you understand exactly what it takes. So go to outofstatemoney.com or simply go to the link in the description of this episode.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Black Real Estate Dialogue Podcast, episode 12. This is the last episode of 2019. The purpose of the Black Real Estate Dialogue is to document the journey of an up-and-coming Black real estate investor and to share the stories of successful Black real estate investors. Shout out to our show sponsors, Mint Inc. Mint stands for the Minority Interdisciplinary Networking Team. Mint empowers young minority professionals with an interdisciplinary network for learning, collaboration, and the development of entrepreneurial ventures. You can become a member of their network for free at mintinc-usa.com. You can also follow them on Instagram at mint_inc. So if you're a minority who's an entrepreneur or interested in entrepreneurial ventures, you definitely want to be part of this network and meet some great people. So as I mentioned, episode 12, this is the last episode of 2019. It's been an incredible journey since our first episode on October 14th. Thank you so much to all of our listeners, all of our supporters, every repost, mention, text, DM, and everything else. It means so much to me. I really wasn't sure how this would go when I decided to start the podcast, to start the Instagram page, but it's just been so much greater than I could have imagined. And it's thanks to all of you who support week in and week out and continue to share this with the people in your network. We're almost at 1,000 followers, which is incredible. But more importantly, people are learning. People have reached out to me and I've been able to refer them to different resources and different people who have been on the show. And that's really why I did it, to share the stories of people who are doing great things, but also to serve as a connector and serve as a resource to my community and the community at large, you know. And I just can't wait to see how this podcast grows next year. I just can't wait. I'm very excited. And special shout out to my brother, Josh Foster, who created the logo and helped me to build this idea into a reality. You know, we kind of spoke about it as I was at his apartment during the summertime, and we just did it. You know, we got the logo going, went back and forth. I set a date and the podcast started. So just want to thank you all. I really do appreciate it. I'm excited for this episode and thank you. Thank you. Thank you. That's all I can say. I mean, as far as the home in Dayton, things are going well. Been a homeowner for a couple months now, and you know, really looking forward to growing my portfolio, getting back out to Dayton and seeing what else I can find. But thank you all again. Let's get into it. Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Black Real Estate Dialogue Podcast. Here with me, I have Tim White. He's a real estate investor based in Huntsville, Alabama. He's the owner of Kingsway Properties. He currently invests in Mississippi and also in the Huntsville, Alabama area. Tim, thank you so much for taking the time to be with us today.
No, thank you. I appreciate this. You know, like, this is my first podcast, so this a little interesting for me. I've heard a ton of them, but you know, it's the first time being on one, so I appreciate the opportunity.
Of course, of course. Glad to have you, man. So first, tell us more about who you are, what you currently do for work.
Tim White, Timothy Keene White. So Keene's Way is my Keene's my middle name. So I just decided to name the LLC that. I don't know anyone else named Keene. I just thought that would be kind of unique. So, background, my day job, I'm a computer engineer. I went to Jackson State University in Mississippi. Once I finished my undergrad in 2010, I moved up to Huntsville, Alabama. I was previously doing co-op work here. And then I had my day job and was just going about life, thinking that's okay, have a decent salary with some security. I was working my master's as soon as I got up here. But then I bought a house And I was thinking, okay, I bought a house and got my day job and kind of thinking, now what? And then, you know, just start living life as a young guy with a decent job in a small town of Huntsville, Alabama. So.
Definitely. And what was your childhood like? What did you see or not see that shaped your view of building wealth as a child?
As a child, you know, growing up in Mississippi, I come from my dad's father was a World War II veteran, and also he had several businesses. He does some work as they call it. But you see the guys on the side of the road selling stuff. He did a lot of that type of work, and also the primary industry was farming. They're originally from my family. My mom and dad are both from Prentice, Mississippi, which is southern Mississippi. It's in the Pine Belt. So in the Pine Belt, a lot of pine trees, a lot of forests. We're also in the farming and logging industry. So my grandfather, he had a logging business. As it went, my dad was in the timber business as well. So we were, as my dad was in the military, I'm the youngest of four, so we kind of moved around several times before I was born. But he got in back to Mississippi, and he started his logging company back up. My parents never finished college or anything like that, so I didn't have, you know, I was kind of lower middle class and stuff, you know, never went for anything, but very hardworking. My mom had a job, my dad a day job, and he had a hustle, and the hustle was the timber business. So he, all summer long, you know, if we were not in school, we were in the woods. Running equipment and understanding that business. So it taught us, you know, work ethic. However, one thing about that type of business, my dad had several 18-wheelers, logging equipment. That stuff is very capital intensive, and you don't have, and it's labor intensive as well. So if you don't have the right system in place or whatever, that business could easily get away from you, and then you have big competition as if you're a small guy trying to cut down timber, several tracts of land or whatever, and you got someone else with a bigger crew than you, they're going to put you out of business. So that's what a lot was happening. They went from, if you know anything about the timber industry, they went from short logs to hauling hauled trees. And when you're doing that, you can't compete if you don't have the machinery or the manpower to take care of it. So my dad was, we were in that business. We did well for a while, but however, it was just very capital and labor intensive. So from that, I did learn, you know, a lot about, you know, just overall how to work, my dad had a day job and he had that business, and then dealing with other people that support your business and running day to day. So overall, as a child, I knew a man needs a day job and he needs a side hustle. So that's kind of where I'm at right now too. But my dad, my parents are still married. They actually live in San Antonio, Texas right now. So it was an interesting story. So once I finished, I was the first in my family to go to college. And so when I finished high school, my parents, instead of just like moving instead of the kids going away, my parents left. They just left the house down there in Jackson. My sister was standing there at the time. So it was a unique situation. Like I stayed in Jackson to go to college. However, my parents left. So it was kind of like, this is a new place for me since my parents aren't here. It's like, you know, home is where your mom is. So.
That's awesome. That's awesome. It's great. I mean, it seems like you learned a lot of good principles and just kind of what it was like to work, what it was like to hustle and not just rely on the day job from your dad. And I'm sure you learned a lot during those summers in the woods and working that business. Probably a lot of things you didn't realize you were learning as a kid.
Very much so. The first thing I learned is that I don't want to work outside. So that's why I went to college. So one thing, my dad, if you were not doing anything, you got to go to the woods. I mean, that's kind of, you know, you stay in my house, you live by my rules. However, if I say that I'm going to this some type of camp or a chess tournament or something like that, I can get out of it. So I was like, okay, let me just be good at this, because it was, you know, it was backbreaking labor out there. I didn't really want to do it. So, but you know, it taught me a lot, you know, just overall hard work. But I really didn't want to do that stuff. Because at the end of the day, my mind was attracted to how the numbers worked. I knew how much money it takes to get a load of a cart of wood, a cord of wood. Just look at the return of that. Like we're out here all day. And you might make, $1,000, $1,200 a load. It might take you a whole day to do that. And you got to pay your hands, you got to pay your equipment, everything like that. And then you got to do all the other taxes and maintenance and everything else associated with keeping the business running. And essentially you're making, you know, $15-$20 an hour for it. That wasn't, I thought you could do more with that much work. I thought I could do more. So I didn't like it that much.
Definitely. Definitely. So why real estate? Why did you decide that you wanted to become a real estate investor and use that to build another stream of income?
Well, I find a situation or a problem I have, and then I try to find a solution. So it'll take care of itself, and I could be outside of it. So let me explain a little bit. So while I was when I first moved to Huntsville, I didn't have anything with me. You know, my parents, you know, and even though we didn't have any needs, then, you know, I was the type of child, I didn't want to ask for anything. So I moved up here. I kind of stayed at a friend's house. I slept on the floor for like 2 weeks, because I didn't bring anything with me. I just had my old 2006 F-150, which I still drive to this day. I just slept on the friend's floor until I was able, you know, get my, own income. And I bought a futon and I stayed there for like another month. And then I got my own apartment. And, you know, I still slowly start building up stuff. So I didn't have anything, really. So I got that apartment, stayed there, and the apartment wanted to raise my rent. And I was like, you know, why would you want to raise my rent? And you're offering rent at a discount to other people to move in. And I didn't like it. So I looked for a house, and I saw other people building houses as Huntsville was growing at the time. I thought, okay, let me just buy a house. So I started searching for a house that would work for me. I wanted to kind of like a condo or something like that, low maintenance. Actually, when I was ready to go buy, a lady, she had a really bad attitude and it didn't work out for me. So I started looking at other people. She didn't essentially want to work with me. I had the credit, had the down payment, all other stuff. So I started just going to look at other houses, and I met a realtor. She told me that I probably could do better than what I was looking at, the product that she was selling at the time. So I did. So I took her advice and I started looking. I found a house just close to the Research Park area of Huntsville. And it's kind of where how Huntsville is. It's a very defense related town. So everything goes by rest on Arsenal and Research Park. I found the house there. Long story short, I got in the house. It was a foreclosure. The house came up at $95,000. Everything in the area was selling for like $130,000, $135,000. I got in the house, no down payment, anything. So I just had to pay closing costs. I only paid like $1,500 to move into the house. And I was thinking like, you know, I could stay in an apartment or just make this house work. But it was a foreclosure and there was some risk with it. So essentially it was a HUD foreclosure. At the time in 2012 when I did this, they had programs to let you pay $100 down. But since this was a HUD, I got a 203B loan. So after I paid the $1,500, they gave me a check back for like $700 to get a water heater. And so the water heater wasn't bad. It just had, it was copper and they didn't, take the water out of the tank. So a piece burst. And so, I got that fixed for like $150. So I got a check to move into my first property. So that was in 2012 when I did that. And I was like, okay, this is okay. But, I stayed there for a while, you know, had a decent salary. My mortgage was only like $600. The interest rate on that first property was like 3% or something. Interest rates were insanely low back then. So I still had that house as part of my portfolio. So that was 2012. I didn't do anything else with real estate until 2014, I believe, because I was getting my master's at that time. But the next thing I did was I was traveling a lot. So I had a need. I was traveling a lot. I didn't like the situation. Paying, you know, going back and forth. I was dating someone that lived in California. She actually lived in Burbank, California. So I was just I was from Huntsville to Burbank. That's, you know, it's an expensive trip. So I was like, I don't want to pay for this. So it was like I heard of a guy that when I first moved to Huntsville as a co-op, I stayed in a guy's house who was renting out his bedroom in his house. And it was a great experience for me. It was like the co-op didn't pay for housing or any of them. Boarding assistance. So I just I stayed there, probably like $300 a month. And it was adults. It was like an adult boarding house. So I think I could do the same thing. So I heard about Airbnb. I put my house on Airbnb, and this was 2014. Huntsville is pretty behind on things. Things are going on in California. We're probably like 2 years behind on. So so for Airbnb here, it was probably like 14 listings at the time. So I just put my room on there, and you know, it started staying booked. So all I needed was the amount of money to cover my flight to go back to California every month. And that's what I did for that until 2015. That's when I kind of started investing in real estate a little bit more.
Definitely, definitely. A couple of things I'd like to touch on. So for foreclosure, it's something I'm not too familiar with, and probably some of our listeners not familiar with kind of how that process works. Can you explain how the process might be a bit different for buying a house that's in foreclosure?
So I think situations might be a little different, but I just talk about my particular situation. So a lot of people get FHA loans as the first loan that they will get, as if, you know, they call them the poor man's mortgages or something. So because you can get a low down payment, so you can get a house for 3.5% down or something like that. However, you do have to pay primary mortgage, a PMI. So that insurance kind of adds to the fee, but that's a topic for a different conversation kind of thing. But so that foreclosure, if it was FHA, so the lady didn't pay for it, she ended up, you know, getting foreclosed on the house. FHA has a website called HUD Home Store. And if you're an owner occupant, you have the opportunity to bid on a house that's available prior to the open investors going in there. If you say that you're going to live in the house for a year or so, you can go in and bid on those houses as soon as they come up. And this is less competition in that. So that's how that would work for FHA foreclosure using, the housing urban development, a HUD home or whatever.
Got it. That's awesome. I mean, that's amazing. You went from, you know, being upset that your rent was being increased to essentially getting a check to move into your first house. That's pretty amazing.
Yeah. In hindsight, I guess. The main thing, the house had equity in it. So I was, you know, Huntsville was a very small market, and I wasn't sure I wanted to live here. So while I was doing my research, most people say, you know, buy a house with equity in a good location. So just in case you do need to leave, you can sell the house within three months. And, you know, in the market in 2012, it's nothing like it is now. Houses were sitting on the market for some time. There were a lot of foreclosures back then. Wow. So it was a different kind of thing to look at. However, I knew I had the equity inside of that deal.
Definitely. So how did you grow your portfolio from there? I know you mentioned, you pursued your master's and then kind of got back into it in 2014. How did you grow to where you are now?
So I guess let's go over the history of it. I guess in 2014, I started doing Airbnb, and 2015, I was just trying to figuring out what I wanted to do. I spent some time just reading books and just educating myself, not just on real estate, but just, you know, what I wanted to do, what I wanted to be in life. I think I was 26 or 27. So 2015 come along, and I was thinking, okay, if I'm still in Huntsville, because I was looking for jobs in California, but the cost of living, everything was out there, was just insane to me. So I didn't want to do that, knowing I want to keep a job similar to what I have, just the job security and benefits and stuff like that. And the pay didn't really work out there. I wasn't willing to take the risk to lose security that I have in my day job. So I was like, if I'm staying in Huntsville, I was just trying to invest. So I was looking at properties in early 2015, and one of my good friends told me to, like, hey man, look, properties back at home in Jackson, you know, you can buy something for $20,000 and rent it for, you know, $700-$800 a month. And I was like, okay, let me think about that. And at around the same time, I heard about Bigger Pockets, and I listened to a podcast. I cannot remember the episode, but anyway, it was a lady in Baltimore buying houses at $35,000 a pop, you know, fixing them up and, you know, renting them out for like $1,000, $1,200 or so. I'm not sure those exact numbers, but I was like, okay, I could do that. People are doing this. So anyway, a situation came up where my parents' house, they were still in Jackson. They were, you know, rented out, and my brother was actually staying there when this actually happened. But my brother was about to move, he was about to buy a house, and my parents didn't want to cover the mortgage payment because they still had a mortgage on the house at the time. So I came and said, yeah, I could just buy the house from you guys. So I bought the house that I grew up in. And so one thing that they had, and I didn't know about this, but, you know, they had a land contract on the house, which is a rent-to-own type of situation. Where they were paying, you know, a portion of rent to the house, but it was really going towards interest or whatever. And that was a lot of times in poor communities, you have those land contracts. So I'm not big on those yet. I don't really go by those rent-to-own lease options. I don't like them because of that. My parents are in this situation. And most of the time, you know, if you don't pay up, you know, you can, it's easy to get kicked out. Instead of, you know, somebody doing a foreclosure, they can just do an eviction on somebody that's in the land contract. So anyway, long time, bought the house that I grew up in, it needed some work. So I'm in Huntsville driving, I drive back and forth to Jackson, Mississippi, every weekend.
How far is it?
It's about 4.5 hours.
It's a serious drive.
Yeah, I mean, I probably could do the drive with my eyes closed now. You know, I've been doing it so long. About 10 years. So every weekend. So one good thing about my day job, it affords me a lot of opportunity and flexibility. So every other Friday I had off, or if I had a lot of leave, I might take a week off. And bought the house. It needed some updates as far as, you know, cosmetic flooring, painting, needed a new air handler. So anyway, I ended up putting about $12,000 into the house. Bought it 27, put about $12,000 into the house. And I guess I can break down the numbers of, you know, how I did that. So since I knew that I was going to try to invest, I was saving up money. I was really cheap. Like like if I did go out to eat fast food, like I would, since I drove that same pickup, I wouldn't even sit in the drive thru. I didn't want it to just be idling and wasting gas. So I just walk inside. So it was, I ate the same thing every day for lunch for, you know, about 2 years. And I was able to save up a nice chunk of money, a relatively nice chunk of money to go towards the down payment. In addition to that, I found out about 401k loans. Well, program we have is a thrift savings plan. So it's a low interest loan that you can get. I did that. And also, I took out some of the equity into the house that I had. So just to get lined up to make sure I had cash available. And I, since, you know, I bought the house at 95, the house was worth 135. And it's a local community bank. It's actually a credit union. Essentially, if you have some equity, you stayed in the house for a number of months, really, not even a year, whatever the county appraised the value at, they will give you a line of credit up into that amount with an instant approval on it. Very low competitive interest rate on it. So I opened up all those things thinking, okay, I'm going to buy a house. When I do buy a house, I want to be aggressive at it. So that's what I was in 2015. So I got that. House was 27,000. I reached out to a local bank that will finance 75% of it. So I had to bring 25% of the down payment. And my parents didn't take a profit off of it. So I just had to pay off their loan. Then, you know, I took title. So I paid and used some of my own cash to refinance the house, even though I had these other lines of credit and other, and the 401k loan available, just to pay the down payment and then paid everything out of pocket. And that was in April or May of 2015. Ended up, so all in, the house was 27, put like $12,000 into, so like $40,000. House I grew up in, was renting for like $725. I could have rented out for more, but, you know, from the beginning of this, I was thinking I want to provide quality, affordable housing. Because a lot of people in neighborhoods that I grew up in, somebody get the house for dirt cheap, don't do anything to it, and just put a tenant in and never do anything to help out the overall community. And I do not want to be that kind of guy. So that was the first one in 2015.
Definitely. Wow. That's powerful. I think one is great that you were able to kind of keep the family house, you know, upgrade it and also rent it at an affordable rate to someone in the community. And as you mentioned, you know, a lot of, you know, there's a lot of slumlords out there, you know, who will, you know, who will just, like you said, throw somebody in there, never fix anything, and have someone living in a disrepaired predicament. But, you know, I think you don't have to do that. You can still make money. You can still make a profit and provide something people can afford, provide something that's nice. You know, I think everybody, I think we can agree, everyone deserves to live in a good place, good, clean, upgraded place. So I think that's really cool.
Yeah. I think the main thing I kind of think about, the people in low income areas, most of my tenants have cable. I don't have cable, but the people who have cable and stuff, they still watch HGTV. They still want nice things. They see that. So, yeah. You know, one thing by upgrading a little bit, you know, I try my best not to charge that much. I want to do charge market rate. So essentially, if there's a house going for 800 in the neighborhood, and there's somewhere between 800 and 700, based on, you know, looking at comparable areas, I kind of want to be in the middle of that. But, you know, I still want to provide a good product. So once the tenants go into the house, they can say, okay, this guy's take care of it. So let me not mess it up. So that's kind of why I try to do that.
Definitely. That makes a lot of sense. I mean, how many units do you have currently?
Let's give a little history on. So in 2015, I bought that first house. Then I bought another house here in Huntsville. I'm still thinking about buying everything under, you know, out of that one podcast I hear, everything under 35,000. I bought a house for 34,000. It was owner finance. Owner finance, and I used my line of credit to as the down payment. So really no, I mean, there's a line of credit. No, I'm not sure if that you count that as cash out of pocket, but 34,000. All I had to do was paint it and just rent out for 600. Then I bought another house in 2015, and that one was required a significant amount of work to it. I bought the worst house in my neighborhood, essentially. And I was still going back and forth to Jackson to do that. So the other houses were being or renting out, making some income. But I bought a house for $7,000, ended up putting about $35,000 into it. And that includes new plumbing, did new electrical. The biggest thing in Mississippi, they have the soil, they call it some Yazoo clay or something. But anyway, a lot of properties have bad foundation issues. So we jacked the house up. Didn't know when you jack a house up, you'll mess the roof up. And you'll mess up a lot of the sheetrock in the house. The house had termites. But I was like, you know, I'm trying to buy the hood. I'm buy the block, as they say. I was really trying to do that. Like the house had been, it was a slumber condition when I was a kid. So, you know, I was driving my bike in the neighborhood at 5 or 6. It looked bad. So I was thinking, okay, 20 plus years later, I'm going to be the buyer to come buy the hood, buy my block. Anyway, long story short, I got the house, I bought cash, and I really put all cash into the house. So at $40,000, I didn't have that much money, so I was kind of broke at the time. But anyway, I got through it, pushed through it, got it rented out. And then I bought some more, about two more houses in 2016. So that put me at, you know, six doors, and I'm still five rental properties and the house now. Currently, my permanent residence at the time, I was renting it out. So I had enough money to, you know, how I was renting out that bedroom, it covered the mortgage, essentially.
Wow.
So that was six in 2015. But I do want to tell you the story how the two properties I bought in 2016, while I was doing that big rehab of, you know, the house that I bought for $7,000, I was taking pictures. I really wasn't posting that much on Instagram or anything like that, but I was just keeping a journal of it just so I can see. I didn't believe I could get it rehabbed. It was really bad condition. I didn't believe in myself at the time, so I just kept pushing through. But anyway, while I was doing this, I had a guy renting out of the bedroom of my house, and I showed him what was going on, and he was like, "Yeah, wow, you're doing stuff like on HGTV." I was like, "Yeah, well, not making that type of money, because even though I bought the house at seven, I put, you know, $34,000, $35,000 into it. However, you didn't have that much equity in it because of the weren't many comps, it's not that many jobs, it's not that big of demand. So I really had to hold on to the property. So I was just burying $40,000 into a house, which, you know, I essentially, as one of my friend's dad said, Tim, you bought you a lesson. So and that's what I did. Still got the house today. It's doing okay. But however, back to the main story is, I was showing the guy what I was doing, and he said that he put an offer on a house that was a short sale. And also he was looking for a new primary residence. And I was like, well, how are you going to get two mortgages? Because I asked, like, what was the price of the house that was a short sale? It was like, it's like $100,000. You know, if you're doing a short sale, you got to be willing to, short sales don't work. It's nothing short about them. So you're going to have that money, have access to the money, and make sure you're not tying it up for until whenever you're able to close. And then you get a primary residence. You're going to have some type of down payment. And he told me that for the short sale, he offered $100,000. Cash. And I was like, and then he said, yeah. So I was like, okay, so what are you going to do for the primary residence you're looking for? He said, yeah, I was just going to put 25% down. So I was like, you're renting out a room for me. Yeah, you have that much cash available. And so I was like, well, I got other opportunities. I got my other deals coming along. So anyway, he worked on the two props I bought in 2016. He became a private lender for me. He funded the whole deal. I think he had some extra cash. So the guy was really good and stocks and stuff, so he wanted some money that was better than bonds. So I think we ended up buying two properties in Huntsville for $24,000 a piece. He funded the whole thing. I had to come up with the rehab money, but again, I was broke at the time, so I used credit cards to really fix up that last house. But you know, I still wanted to provide a good product even here in Huntsville. So I had at the time, so six units, so three houses in here, three houses in one neighborhood in Huntsville, my primary residence, and, you know, those two. And in Jackson. So 6 units, 2016. I didn't buy anything else really until January 2018. I had a lot of credit card debt, and I was trying to see, did I really want to do this? Whether I want to go down this path? And I spent a lot of time. I took up bodybuilding and then worked on my spiritual, my mental health, and all the other stuff too. And then get myself ready. I was ready to get married, so I know I need to just work on myself, you know. Went to counseling for, like, personal issues. And I would definitely recommend, you know, Black guys, Black people in general, you know, it's okay to go to counseling, you know, talk to. I think about it as, you know, one person called this as a hooker for your emotions. So sorry for how bad that sounds, but it was worth talking to people. So anyway, at that time, you know, getting myself spiritually and mentally ready, it allows me for what happened in 2018 and 19. So again, how many doors? So that's 6 properties. And then, okay, 2018, in my neighborhood, let me know if I'm taking too much time. Okay. And so 2018, I was driving by a house and I was just calling it, you know, every day. I mean, not every day, every week or every other week, at least once a month. Luckily somebody answered the phone for me, and I was like, okay. So they told me that, you know, they're trying to sell the house. So the house was the worst house in the neighborhood by far. No one had lived in it for several years. It was a bad shape. It had a tree laying on the roof. But next to that was another house that was in decent shape. They'd been on the market for about almost a year. And since I knew that I was working on this one deal in the house next to it, they wanted 130 at the beginning of the process when it first came on market. And I was like, that's a little too high. So still driving by, I drive this path to work every day, looking at it. And then I knew this other one was going to come down. So I was like, okay, so let me put an offering on this. So they ended up going from 130. I got it down to 115 or something. And knowing that my house was worth 135 in that neighborhood. So I knew it had some equity, but not that much. But the main thing, the main prize was the house next door. If I can control 2 assets side by side. So anyway, I ended up buying the house, and I put the whole house on Airbnb. And this was the one that was on the market for a year. Put the whole house on Airbnb. Wasn't sure if that was going to work. So actually, I told the lender that I was going to live in the house because I had all intentions to do that. However, back in my primary residence, so I would rent out one bedroom. I just rent out my master bedroom. So I was renting out one room in my house for $650. So anyway, I was making $1,300 while living in the house in Huntsville, which is so I was like, let me just go to live in this house. And then I'm put on Airbnb. If somebody book it, I just go sleep in the extra room that's in my other house. I can just walk over to my other house. And so put on Airbnb. And at this time, you know, I had got back with my current, my wife now. And so she had been doing Airbnb. I had got her to do an Airbnb while we were dating. So we were like, let's just run this whole house and see, can we provide a whole house on Airbnb? If we just did the numbers at the per diem rate in Huntsville of $90 a night, if we could just hit 60% occupancy, 70% occupancy, we can make a profit. Or we know a model that does work is renting out by room, which we could do $600 a night for this 3-bedroom house. So that was the model we tried to do. Come to find out, that worked. People were attracted to it. And I thought I was going to live in the house, but it wasn't vacant that long. So I was just sleeping in my house in my small office while I'm renting out that room, that house for $1,300 a night. Got this other house on Airbnb, and the house that I was trying to reach out to multiple times, I actually closed on it. So the house I bought at 115, I bought it in January. The house next door, I paid $20,000 for it, but it needed a significant amount of work. So got that going, found some contractors, got the house fixed up. Long story short, I think put 45 into the house, renting out on Airbnb. I think we're doing between 1,800 and 2,000 a month. But we're not doing nightly rentals. We're normally doing executive kind of stays. So most people staying over 30 days. But at the end of the year, that house was appraised at like 145. So at Huntsville lately has seen a lot of appreciation. So we kind of rode on that. So that's what, 7 and 8. And then in 2018, after I finished that big rehab, that's when I met, I was on Bigger Pockets a lot. I didn't like my job at the time. I was on Bigger Pockets. And anytime somebody said anything about Huntsville, I would chime in. So this is my opinion. This is what I think. So I didn't necessarily know it, but it's like in the software development world, which, you know, my day job, a lot of people say, if you if you can teach something, it's the best way of learning. So that's why I was, you see me a lot on Bigger Pockets trying to help people out in Huntsville. As I'm teaching, like, okay, yeah. And then somebody else chimes in, like, okay, they're right. Okay, let me add this to my arsenal, what things to say about Huntsville. And a guy reached out to me. He slid into my DMs on Bigger Pockets saying he's buying houses in the same area I am, 35805. But he has lending lined up. He has the properties lined up, but he doesn't have contracting at the time, like somebody to rehab, reposition the property. At the time, I had just finished a big rehab of putting $45,000 into a house that was $20,000. And that house was really bad. We essentially rebuilt the first floor, had to put a new roof on it, painted it. It was a significant rehab. So I was like, I'm fresh out. I can figure this out. I can do it. And so 2018, in addition to that, he said that he was interested in private money. So I had started to ramp up my marketing, my direct mail. And one thing about my direct mails, I look at properties that are kind of next door to where I'm already at. I really like that. I like staying in the same neighborhood because my property manager stays low. I don't plan on quitting my job for, you know, foreseeable future, at least not until I'm like 40. So I market to the next house next door. I got a call. So the guy DM me on Bigger Pockets. I called him while I was going to an appointment. And so I got the house under contract. I was like, okay, how am I going to fund it? After having a conversation. So anyway, the guy funded it. I started work, getting a crew on his house together to position this. Because I had a handyman the whole time that did smaller jobs. He couldn't really handle the workload. Actually, in Huntsville, which is different than any market. I mean, I haven't been to most, but, you know, between San Antonio, Huntsville, and Jackson, Mississippi, people don't really have to work that hard here. So the guy would tell me, like, I want this done at the house. Like, nah, Tim, you know, you don't have to do that. And he, like, if you do want to do that, I'm not going to do it for you. You can find somebody else, which I'm not used to anybody talking to me like that. But anyway, he was right on a lot of things. But long story short, we worked that house out in August of 2018. I rehabbed this other house. And as of 2019, so that's what, 9 doors. And so this year I probably I can't even remember how many houses I picked up this year, like 8 houses this year, 2019. And and then my partner, he picked up, that guy and I still have a kind of very loose relationship. I started doing property management for those houses since I have the maintenance team here. I have the system in place a little bit better. So really this year, 2019, is the first time I was really focused on doing on real estate. So I did a few, I guess, hotel deals, wholesale deals. Most of my marketing, if I don't want it, I send it to someone else. But the good thing about what I'm doing here is it's kind of not necessarily good, but it's unique. So of those, I had 8 properties that's really primarily off the same street in Huntsville, in a certain area of Huntsville, and then in another neighborhood in Madison City where we live at. I have another, I think, 8 properties there, and then including what my wife has. So it's off the same street. So you got one neighborhood here and then the next neighborhood. So it's on the same street. So we just drive up down the road like we're on this. And it really helps us out with managing, especially on the short-term rentals, as this is more involved. So anyway, that's kind of leading me to 2019, what we're doing now as we're going into 2020. Let me know if you have any questions.
Yeah. That's remarkable. There's so much great things I want to touch on in there. I think one thing is, I think it's amazing how the guy who was renting the room became like your business partner and started to help to fund some of your rehabs. That's pretty amazing. And I think it goes to show you just how important it is to just talk to people, about what they're doing, what they have going on, because you never know where a partnership could come from. So I think that's pretty significant. And also the guy you met on Bigger Pockets, you know, he had an issue. He had some parts of the puzzle figured out, but you were able to, you know, help him kind of move forward and work with him on deals as well. So I think that's really great. Can you talk more about just why you decided to just share what you're doing with people, on Bigger Pockets, or even people who are renting rooms from you?
This It's really just to show people that it can be done. For me to, when I first moved to Huntsville, not have anything, just really not having one mattress, I just slept on the floor. I mean, it's kind of, I could ask my parents for money or whatever, but I didn't have anything personally. So, and it's now that I, you know, I have multiple properties and I have Airbnbs, I have several mattresses, so kind of things. So I just want to share with people like this is possible. Like, if I can do this, if Tim White can do this, you can do it too. So that's kind of why I share it. Now, on Instagram, on social media, I call it side hustle muscle. Like, you can have a day job and do the same thing. If I can do it, you can do it too. I'm not sure where this journey is going to take me, but you know, right now we're okay. So if I can do this, you can do it too. And I just want to share this. This is possible. You don't have to be flashy. You could be low key, but you still could be okay at doing this real estate thing.
Definitely. Something else I wanted to touch on. So you have a couple big rehabs under your belt. What was going through your mind just as someone who is newer to the game, taking on such a big job? Was it kind of, you know, I'll just go in and figure this out type of thing? Like, what was going through your mind during that time? Were you nervous? Were you kind of, what was that like?
So on the first one, that big rehab I did in Jackson, a house I probably bought at $7,000. That one was, you know, I'm going to buy the block. Like, you know, mm-hmm. I'm going to buy the block, support my neighborhood, you know, be the change you want to see. However, you know, I had people who were into real estate and were on the real estate and the construction side. A lot of older guys helped me out. I mean, they could have charged me a lot more. They saw that I was young, energetic. Okay, Tim, well, it looked like you don't know what you're doing, but I like you. So let me show you. This is how that should be done. And, you know, really, it's like if you put that energy out, you know, people will help you. And that's kind of how that first rehab. But the lessons I learned from that is, you know, it helped me to get right where I am right now. As far as, you know, if a deal come across to me, I could rehab it. Or I know what it takes to get a rehab repositioned. I can do that and provide good estimates and turn over very well. And again, another thing, once these rehabs, my primary method of doing this is the Burr method. So I'm not flipping, you know, I'm not wholesaling, I'm not doing sexy stuff like that. So I'm in it for the long run, even though we're doing short-term rentals and those are pretty good. But you know, that's just still, at the end of the day, we're trying to get passive income. That's our goal. We're going to keep our W-2 income, and the main reason to keep our W-2 is so we can do refinances.
Definitely. And talk to us more about the Airbnb. What that's been like, just managing those. This is my first time speaking with someone who's done Airbnb. So can you talk to us more about, you know, why you decided to get into it and kind of how you manage that? It's definitely pretty different from a traditional rental.
Okay. So I could so I try to treat it more like a regular rental is what I do. It all really came from in 2009 when I was co-oping. I saw the opportunity for people to come here. As Huntsville is very defense related, and it's a lot of contract work supporting defense industry. These people need somewhere to stay, and most of the time a hotel is not going to give you a discount for long-term stay. So I saw that there was an opportunity from just the hotel daily rate or weekly rate versus when you get an apartment, you needed to stay somewhere for 6 months or something that they wanted to lease. So I wanted to cover the things in between that from 31, anything over 30 days to under 6 months. And I saw a niche in that. So that's where I focus at. So for the daily Airbnb, the people who fix houses up and make them all look like Westons, that's not us. So what we do, we provide more of a quality, our product is more like a Quality Inn, Days Inn, La Quinta, but that's still, those businesses are still making money too. So that's kind of where we are. But I can go over a deal with you. So so I think, you know, give an example, it helps out. So one property, 2018, I found, really driving for dollars. Found the guy, the yard was kind of growing up, but this is in the same neighborhood that we bought land in. I could tell you a little bit about that, but, let me tell you about that now. So we saw some land for sale. The price of stuff was going up. We wanted to stay in this area of Madison City because of the schools. However, I saw a lot that was like $70,000 for like a third of an acre. However, one street over was another lot that was available, and it was like $20,000. I was like, that doesn't make sense. So I just, you know, every day I just drive the same path. It's still on my path to go from home to work. So just drove in there. At the time, my wife and I were thinking about getting engaged, and we were looking at it. We ended up buying these two lots. So that you had this third of an acre that was 70,000, and two streets over had a lot that was like 20,000. We ended up buying that lot and a lot next to it. So we bought an acre in the Madison City for about, you know, I think 55,000. However, that's still less than the lot that was worth 70,000. So we're thinking, as we're looking into this neighborhood, as I'm driving for Dallas and thinking on my way to work, just trying to unwind from work, you know, if we're going to build a house, you know, we wanted a nice house. So, you know, build a house maybe worth 400,000 in a neighborhood where most of the houses sold for 200,000. However, our neighbors behind us, those houses are between 500 and 700,000. So we kind of just like, okay, well, let's try to get more houses in this neighborhood. So once I found the house and the guy willing to sell, I was like, okay, what can I do to make this advantageous to us? Because we're going to have to hold it until we finish up our house to kind of push up these values, as these neighborhoods was built in the 50s. Then the one behind it with the $500,000 to $600,000 house is somewhere in there. It was built like 10 years ago. However, I saw that there was an opportunity there. So anyway, got the guy's information. I looked him up and I figured out he's an owner occupant. At the time, I didn't know about, you know, looking up somebody, skip tracing, any of that stuff. So I just mailed him a letter, and then I was like, let me look up him on Facebook. So again, I slid into his DMs on Facebook Messenger, and he was like, yeah, I want to sell it. And then, you know, I figured it out. Okay, this is what the price was. He had a mortgage of about $139. So I offered him, you know, $140 for the house. At that same time, the guy who I met on Bigger Pockets, he had the private money. So he ended up, you know, I negotiated him. Like, he wanted to know essentially what I'm going to do with the house. So just in case, you know, it's a bad deal. You know, he has to take on the house. You know, what are my plans? So I was like, I'm not really sure. So let me figure this out. So the house, let me explain the house a little bit. It's a stacked ranch. I'm not sure if you know what that is, but it's down here. They have we don't have full basements. So you might be on the side of a hill, but you have like a daylight basement, walkout basement. However, normally that's in the back of the house. And this time it was the front of the house. So you got this walkout basement, which looks very odd in the front of the house on a hill. I was like, I don't know what I'm going to do with this. After negotiating with the guy, he said there's 5 bedrooms in the house. I was like, 5-bedroom house in Madison City. You have separate entrances from upstairs and downstairs. So we kind of ran it as a duplex. So we fixed the house up, added a, honestly, it was 4 bedrooms. They had a space to be a 5th bedroom. We added a 5th bedroom to it. So anyway, I got 3-2 upstairs and a 2-1 downstairs. And then I decided to just put a kitchenette in the basement unit. So we're running upstairs and downstairs as different units. And this is one property, had private funding, rehabbed it, did a burr on it, came back, the appraisal came back, I think 200. So bought it 140, put about 10,000, and the lender put all their money up front. So it's really no money out of pocket for us. Other than, you know, furnishing the house. So the Airbnb, you have to furnish it. So we had to pay for that stuff. So anyway, came back. So the Airbnb model. So I'm just saying, I try to explain what I'm doing for the properties, because a lot of people use, you know, Airbnb arbitrage, where they go find a somewhere and get a master lease and then they rent it out. But I'm looking at Airbnb a different way. I look at Airbnb as a way to find new people who are looking for stay somewhere over 30 days. Because it's really no way to market to those people directly. So I just put my product out there and they come in, they might stay with me about a month, but I price it so that someone is looking for a month, I'm going to rise up and they're going to see me. So they'll reach out to me, have a conversation. And at the end of the day, we want to get them to book through us directly, because most people, they come stay for a month and then we offer a decent product that's a little bit better than a hotel, but definitely cheaper than a hotel. And we just offer them month-to-month agreements on those properties. And the Landlord Tenant Act that kind of helps us in this situation. They're staying over 30 days. And so a lot of places don't like Airbnb because you have a transient tenant. You got to get licensed and do a little thing. A lot of neighbors don't like that. But again, I'm buying up multiple houses in the same neighborhood. So that house, the first one I told you about, we bought that house there and, you know, made into essentially like a duplex and ran down to Airbnb, bought the 2 lots that we're building a house on, and then about 2 other houses in that same neighborhood. And we're running those all on Airbnb as well.
Wow, that's awesome. I think what I really like about it is you are taking advantage of an opportunity. As you mentioned, you know, there are a lot of contract workers that come for fixed periods of time. And, you know, seems like you've done your research to make sure that you know, your rooms will come up in the search and just be at the right price for people. So I think it just goes to show just the different options you have with ownership and real estate. You know, like you're doing Airbnb now, but you know, in 3 years you might want to do something else. But I think the great part is you own the asset, so you can really do whatever you want with it, whatever works for what your goals are. So I really, you know, like the fact that, you know, you use different strategies for different homes. So I think that's really cool.
Yeah. So honestly, in that same neighborhood is another house that has a walkout basement. We couldn't divide it. We just finished this house. I go over the numbers with this one too. We bought it at 125. It was a short sale. We were supposed to close on it in February. We didn't close on it until, I think, June. So there's nothing short about that process. Anyway, private lender funding it, 125. This one we negotiated to have 17,000 in. So to go over the private money number. So him and I have a decent relationship, but it's still private or hard money. So it's a 10% interest only loan. However, he does, depending on if he puts money in for the rehab, he puts assigned points to or a penalty. But we do it on the back end. So once I go to refinance, that's when we pay the points. So the house was 125, put 17 into it. The house just appraised for 220. And I think we're supposed to close on the refinances. No, I think that one closed. We did the refinance last month. So I got a little bit of money out of it, but I try to just pay off my lender. And with the house where we're doing, it's about 3,000 square feet. So we have it set up like a small, like bed and breakfast, but we rent out each room. And most, we put, you know, nice shiny numbers on the door. Like this is bedroom one, bedroom two, bedroom three and four. And it's doing pretty well. So I'm thinking about doing other houses that same way. So it's again, that ugly basement. I'm trying to find new ways to provide a good asset that people can use and, you know, make us a decent amount of money. But the end goal is, I know we're about to build a nice house over there and probably might build one on the second lot. So we just want to really ride the appreciation up because I'm not sure if you ever built a house before, but it's a lot, it's cash intensive. So yeah, we're kind of doing like a build flip. But anyway, so while we're building a house, putting all that money into it, there are other people building the house, but we want to ride up on that our own appreciation that we're kind of forcing in that neighborhood.
Definitely, definitely. That's amazing. I think I really like the fact that this is very unique. The fact that you are trying to literally buy blocks, literally buy up neighborhoods, and just buy homes that are very close to one another. I think that's a great way to change the community. You know, back home, also back home, Mississippi, also in Huntsville, just the fact that you seem very intentional about where you want to grow your portfolio and what you want to provide to the community. So I think that's awesome.
Yeah, so I appreciate that. So, but one thing that we are looking into moving forward, you know, I'm still going to try to hone in on buying houses, even the properties that I wholesale to my partner or whatever. I told him like, yo, this house is coming up. It's next to a neighborhood that I currently have four properties in. Like, yo, this is going to be a good deal. So I got, you know, multiple properties for him in the same neighborhood for the same reason. Like, yo, if you can control this asset, you can control the neighborhood. You can kind of force up appreciation. I'm not sure long term just working out in my head it works, but you know, we'll find out. But in the meantime, we're still getting good cash flow off these assets.
Definitely, definitely. Hey man, I think, you know, ride the wave as long as it goes and then readjust and figure out what's next. So I like sometimes I like how you're just diving in and not, you know, not really worried about the next, you know, what is gonna be like in 10 years and 20 years, but just focusing on maximizing what exactly it is now.
I think by controlling multiple assets in the same, you know, close proximity to each other, you can control what that is going to be. So, you know, if you get a good asset and you can control more of it. So I think they do this when they're doing development or gentrification. You know, you build a new house and then you kind of get somebody to buy the house so you can set a comp and then you go build more and stuff like that. So I'm just doing it on a kind of a poor man's level. Like I'm doing it at $50,000 to $100,000 houses. So. Or up to 200,000, really.
Definitely. I love it.
As we're going to 2020, I've only been marketing in certain areas, but we'll look to pick up our marketing and acquisitions to kind of do some other things. So.
Definitely. Can you talk to us about how you currently work with your partner?
Oh, okay. So my partner is, I guess, the lending partner, I guess, is very loose. It's essentially, I know the real estate market. I know the real estate. I know construction. However, he knows he has the funding. He's thinking big picture. So as I'm, you know, building up this rental portfolio, he has some properties. This is the same guy I think I mentioned to you on Bigger Pockets in Dayton, Ohio. Mm-hmm. He was lending on a portfolio there with about 50 doors. And anyway, the guy backed out. So he ended up taking them down and gave like cash for keys for the properties. And he's starting a real estate company there where they're holding properties. But it's a very unique situation that from him and I, he essentially used to buy businesses, get them more profitable and sell them. So now he's looking into doing the same thing with real estate. So it kind of just worked out for him because he wanted to be in Huntsville marketing. He needed boots on the ground. And I saw the opportunity and I'm just kind of running with it. So him and I are, so that partnership is very loose. It's nothing. It's not like we have an LLC together. This opportunity comes up, he funds it. This opportunity, I might find a deal for him. He gives me a wholesale fee. I get my crew to rehab it. I do the property management. So, and I'm not a realtor or anything, so it can't be legit property management. It's my lease. I find the tenants, but I can't negotiate the lease. So it's still his name is on the lease, and he uses my systems for collecting rent and all that kind of stuff. But we're starting to do more things. Do software like Buildium and Cozy and stuff like that. So Cozy.co and Buildium.com to do those, manage those, that portfolio, as he has about 8 properties here and I have about 8 long-term rentals here.
Definitely. That's awesome. And he's based in Dayton, Ohio?
No, he's actually in Santa Rosa, California. So I think he has a, I think they one of his businesses or whatever, they own 4 Audi, BMW, Mercedes-Benz dealerships. So they just run those. So as he's looking, again, his perspective is a lot different than mine. He's looking to start up a private lending company, really using most of his own funds. So that's what he's, you know, working on as we talk through this. You know, I know people who have deal with private lending, like LendingTree, and see how that works. So that's his business plan. We probably talk maybe once a week. Yeah. Honestly, man, he funded most of the deals this year, and I never met him until the Bigger Pockets conference. So we were in there, we were at the conference. My wife actually went up there with me, and I walked. I was like, okay, this looks like the guy from Bigger Pockets. He looked at me, and we were just both looking like,
oh, you didn't know he was going to be there?
I mean, we did know, but like seeing him in person, like, how much money we did. I mean, you know, we've done for the properties I brought to him, the properties, you know, close to $750 or $1 million in real estate deals between us without ever seeing the person face to face. We never even FaceTime anything like this.
Yeah. That's incredible. I really just like the fact that, you know, you're just willing to kind of go, you know, if things make sense, running the numbers and just trusting your gut, you know, especially working with someone who ended up being your private lender, who you worked with, as you said, on a bunch of deals, and you recently met him. I think that's just incredible. I really think that's cool. And, you know, clearly it's helped you get to where you are now, and I'm sure will help you in the future.
Yeah, hopefully so. So him and I are still discussing, you know, what moving forward, where how the relationship works. We actually just got, I have, you know, turned over some deals, but far as flipping and stuff, I'm looking to get into the more in that because as we're doing rentals and really the house we're building is cash intensive. So, you know, it takes a lot. So we want to try to build up our cash reserves a little bit more as the house is taking so much from us. But we're looking at get into acquisitions, and what thing we're doing is so let me tell you this. So, my parents were just out here for Thanksgiving and they saw how busy I am. I have my day job. And then as soon as I get off, I call it side hustle muscle, you know. Yeah. From 5 to 9, I'm, you know, working on real estate, looking at deals. Even though I got the machine going for the maintenance side of it, I'm still trying to acquire new deals and find out ways. So I'm looking at getting the CRM set up and all those other things to direct mail and do texting and all that kind of stuff. But my mom was just like, yeah, this is a lot. And at the time she wasn't working. So I was like, yeah, you can do a lot of this stuff for me, especially on the rental property side, because it's all via Cozy or Google Voice or something like that. So I'm working on getting my mom to be my new executive assistant.
I love it. That's awesome, man.
But at the end of the day, you know, getting that role for my mom, you give her something to do because she like watch HGTV all the time. But I'm like, what I'm doing is not that sexy, but I want to get to that. So again, what my partners and I are doing is looking at more doing more probably providing more turnkey opportunities here in Huntsville. He has the funds, and I could, you know, use some cash, but you know, as we're finding more deals, as you know, we have money, we have the construction crew, but we need to focus more on the acquisitions and marketing. So that's what I'm going to focus on more in this 2020 coming up. Focus on acquisition, trying to grow the business from there.
Definitely. Can you talk to us more generally about the market in Huntsville? We spoke a bit off camera, but I mentioned, you know, we met on Bigger Pockets, and I was asking you about the Huntsville market, and stuff was just like flying. So I'm like, you know what, maybe, you know, now isn't the time for me. So can you talk to us more about the growth you've seen in Huntsville and what the market is like these days?
Well, so it's extremely competitive. So Huntsville, you know, the primary focus here is the defense industry, aerospace. It's kind of like the DC of the South. It has how many defense agency, FBI is building a kind of like a second headquarters, Army Material Command, a lot of these big agencies. And then what most people know about Huntsville is NASA. That's kind of like the smaller of those bigger three, those three-letter organizations that are here. However, a lot of those jobs are engineering jobs, and then you have the big five for defense contracting. You got Lockheed, Raytheon, Northrop Grumman, all those are here too in Research Park. A lot of people didn't know about that. You know, it's just they know about Space Camp. And so as of late, you know, most people saw how they're building a new Toyota Mazda plant here. Facebook is building an operation here. Blue Origin, which is, you know, it's coming here. Google's building, you know, here. Big, I guess the Rocket City has been reasserting itself, and they're doing a lot of building out here. So everyone's looking at MLS. So if a deal come up on MLS, you know, you gotta be there. And then you have to be able to know what you're doing, because if not, you got, first I'm looking at the deal, and then I got my partner looking at, and I know other people in this area that, you know, we don't even put inspection contingencies on our offers. You know, we know how much it costs to rehab a property. So just look at it. If it fits inside this model, you know, we're going to put offering on there and try to move on. So overall, the market is, like you said, it's extremely competitive, even with the wholesalers. I know a guy, two younger black guys, Kenny, Keith and Lenny, they are doing extremely well on wholesaling. They are extremely aggressive when they're doing. I admire what they're doing. Keith Everett and Lenny Harrell, what they're doing here in Huntsville. And I think they're growing their operation, expand a little bit wider. But those big wholesalers, I mean, you're competing with those guys, you're competing with investors, you're competing with smaller guys like me who are trying to become big.
Yeah.
And it's just it's a hard market to get into.
Definitely. And what about Jackson? What's it like over there?
Man, I love my city, so I'm not gonna say too much bad about it, but I would love to. If you have more risk, so your return's gonna be higher, so you can reach that magical 2% rule in Jackson. You know, put $400,000 into a house, you can get $800 worth of rent down there. However, my problem is, since I'm not there, it's getting strong property management in place. I know I can turn on my marketing system down there and find more deals. And I still have some handymen down there. I know a lawyer that helps with evictions, but it's just the day-to-day operations with tenants. It's a little challenging. And so the main thing is, in Jackson, I don't know where my tenants will be working yet. So that's one of the reasons I left down there in school. You know, I came out of school with a good GPA and a computer engineering background. And I couldn't find a job. So that's kind of why I'm here in Huntsville. Because I would love to have stayed in Jackson, but there wasn't any opportunity. So overall, the actual job demand in the market, what things that contribute to you having some type of growth in there, it's not really in Jackson. However, those things are here in Huntsville. We have extremely low unemployment here. It's a lot of growth factors. So that's where we are looking at deals. So we kind of want, in Jackson, you can definitely cash flow all day. However, when you go to disposition those properties, it might be a little hard to get rid of them.
Definitely. Just a couple more questions as we close here. So what would you say to someone who wants to get started in real estate? They're not really sure where to begin, and you know they have some fear. What would be your advice to someone like that?
First, you know, do your homework. I would say look at the numbers, and then I would definitely want a strong why. And I didn't cover this earlier, but I kind of started that I was going to do real estate in 2015. But the why was, at the time, I was maxing out my 401k. I was maxing out my Roth IRA, and I was saving a good chunk of my money. However, you know, you can't touch those retirement accounts really until you're 59 and a half. And I really wanted to build assets now and just get some of the cash flow so I can do the things, so I can live life in the moment a little bit as I'm still saving or doing whatever. So that's when I found out about, you know, real estate. And I was looking at a lot of people's portfolio. Real estate is a big part of most millionaires' portfolio, some part of it for sure. So again, the thing is, you know, have a strong why. And my why was, you know, I just wanted to get to wealth faster. Real estate is always, you know, a wealth builder. I read Rich Dad Poor Dad when I was in high school, I think. It didn't really help me out that much. I started investing in mutual funds back then once I got into college. It wasn't the right asset for me to be into at the time, but you know, just start with the why, and then once you figure out that once that why is strong enough, just start bidding on houses, see what happens.
So, yeah,
ready, fire aims kind of thing.
Definitely, and between like all the units you have, between like Airbnb, long term rentals, just like ballpark, what would you estimate the monthly cash flow is after expenses? Because it seems like you got quite a lot going on.
You know, I really hadn't thought about that. It's a good question. No one really talks about the dollars and cents, I guess. So for those Airbnb, so to go over how many doors I have. I guess I have a total of 17 properties that are rentals, and then you know my wife has three properties or whatever. But from the 17 doors, one of those is, two of those made it to duplex. So that's like 19 units, and one of them rent out bedrooms. So that's like three more. So like 22 doors, as you would call it, 22 doors. And so with Airbnbs, so generally we want to make, you know, $200 a door on a long-term rental. But we really make about $300 a door generally. But you want to factor in, you know, capital expenditures and all that kind of stuff. The Airbnbs is what kind of throws it off. Kind of, yeah. The number is a little bit inflated. So we're probably between 5 to 8 somewhere in there. Kind of the Airbnbs will kind of throw it off. But
yeah.
We might have some slow months, but we're closer towards about 8,000.
Wow. That's really cool. And then also, what was your biggest fear when it came to real estate before you bought your first house, if you had one?
Biggest fear, not being able to sell it. So that was probably the biggest fear. So, and I hadn't talked about this number. When we approach an asset, looking at it, we want to stay, you know, the rule 70% of loans of that, I mean, of the ARV. But generally, what the ARV is, I know I'm not going to go to a product that's at the high end of the market. I'm not that kind of guy to do those type of flips. So I kind of want to be, I want to take the average of the top five or six properties in there. I probably want to be like a little 10K less than that number. And that's my 7% of that number. That's kind of where I want to be. I know I could exit that property quick if I need to.
Definitely. Lastly, what are some books and resources that have helped you along the way?
So I do read a lot. So I got to probably do an audio book a week, but I think the primary books for me, I'm a Christian. So Proverbs is a lot. I didn't really look at it like as far as business and things like that until later on. So I got a little bit older, but it's a lot of knowledge in Proverbs as far as other books. You know, you talk about that, but really, catch you, you heard of that one, but we actually just got the game and played it over Thanksgiving, and it was a lot of fun, you know, what with my family while I'm playing the game. So, you know, yeah. The Bible, Cashflow Quadrant, and another top book for me, which would be you know, Think and Grow Rich and all those, but Outwitting the Devil, which is another book that I would recommend. Just don't drift. Just kind of focus your energy. Don't give into, you know, sexual temptations and stuff like that. I would say, you know, just being married helps out a lot as far as my focus of where I'm at. My wife, you know, it definitely helps me out a lot. And I haven't talked about this that much. In addition to the profits that we have, my wife manages other Airbnbs for people. And she's an engineer. Wow. She has a day job, too. So she has her own separate side hustle that's different than mine. And, but
yeah,
that'll be how she manages those. That's outside my warehouse. I don't really deal with that, like the cleaners and all the other stuff. I just make sure the yards are cut and stuff like that.
Yeah. It's so. Awesome. Sounds like the dream team.
I mean, yeah, it's a lot of work to get here. But, we're still trying to stay low key. We don't want to, you know, a lot of people get on social media and just, you know, brag about this stuff.
Yeah.
We just want to sit in our own lane. So I was surprised that you reached out to me to try to do this. So.
Definitely. Hey, man, I just want to share the stories of our people who are doing great work all over the country. And I know you mentioned to me, you want people to know it's possible, and it definitely is possible. You know, here's someone you started.
Oh, for sure.
You started from the floor of your friend's house in Huntsville, and look where you are now. You know, I think it's just a testament to faith, to just working hard and taking chances and you know, being crazy enough to believe that you can do what it is you want to do. So I mean, this has just been awesome.
Yeah. So one thing I do want to say as an old guy, when I was first starting thinking about, you know, looking at houses, and I was just going, trying to bid on houses. This old guy had a cigarette in his hand. He looked at me and I was thinking about, you know, bidding on the house. He said, you know, scared money don't make no money. So that's kind of where I'm at right now.
Definitely. Definitely. That's it. Well, Tim, thank you. Thank you so much, man. I really appreciate you coming on today. I can't wait to put this out. I can't wait to listen to it again myself. There's a lot of great nuggets in here that I'm sure people will find tremendous, tremendous value in.
Well, I definitely appreciate the opportunity, man. I wish you the best with your real estate, and definitely as you're in Dayton, if you're looking for more stuff in Huntsville, man, you really want to try to do something, like, you know, try to partner up on something, you know, we can figure something out.
I appreciate that, man. I appreciate that. Well, everyone, thank you so much for tuning in to another episode of the Black Real Estate Dialogue. You can find us on Instagram at Black Real Estate Dialogue. Look forward to talking to you all soon.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.